The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to The Weekend Podcast. If you're tuning in, it's a little bit different from the weekday podcast. The weekday podcast, I chat to CEOs, authors this week as well, but this weekend I'm chatting to people who haven't written or haven't led a company ever in their lives. That's not true,
and can't
actually.
Write.
Yes, it's Pete and Steve. You're right, lads.
Hello.
Hello.
Two fellas I've known for a long time who I'd say Steve, who's the most experienced investor amongst us, and then it goes down to Pete, then me, I suppose. But do you watch Gogglebox? I've just been watching it, I say that. Do you ever watch it?
No.
I love it. I genuinely love it. I think it's hilarious. Some of them are, you know, intentionally funny, but some are just thick. But what I've noticed with Gogglebox is everyone who's been on there for a long time are putting on weight. It's like everyone. They are getting bigger and bigger. Two sisters, Ellie and Lizzie, I think they are, they've literally put on like 2 or 3 stones to start it. And all they talk about is food. And you're thinking, this is not good. It just shows having a sedentary lifestyle and watching telly is not good for you. You know, we're not born for that, really, are we? You know, we are meant to be out hunting for food and all that stuff, you know?
And so people watching Gogglebox, there's a danger that
doing the same, yeah, I know. Having said that, do you know what? This week, my treadmill's broken, right? So this week, I'm about to take to the streets. So I've been doing. I normally do 40 minutes on a treadmill. So I thought I planned a sort of route, and I went up running in the morning. I'm out at say 6:10, and I've done it 3 times this week, and it's about 45 minutes. But do you know what? My legs are all stiff. Isn't that odd? I run every day on the treadmill. I go running on the road. My legs, my calves are stiff.
Road running is completely different.
Yeah. It's not completely different, Steve, is it? I'm running. But it's on the road. It's not complete. It's like, you know, I'm running on my head or something. It's not completely different. Yeah. Also, it's high impact. And also, I suppose the consistency of the treadmill, your steps are very similar, aren't they, all the time? Whereas on the road, you go up and down, you twist your ankle and all that. So, yeah, it's different. Do you know what I love this week? Love or hate Trump, right? Love him or hate him. He's a character, isn't he? I think people who want him gone will miss him, I think, when he's gone. Because do you see what he called Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, this week?
No, I didn't.
You didn't see that, did you? He had Tim Cook next to him, right? He's talking away and he called him Tim Apple.
Brilliant.
He said, I've told Tim Apple, I've said this. And I thought, that's brilliant, Tim Apple. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, changed his little logo on Twitter to a little apple. So Disney to Tim Apple now. And I just said, do you know what I'm saying? I love to see Trump right around the table with all the big US CEOs, you know, saying, you know, it's an honor to be here with Tim Apple, Jeff Amazon, Gary Google, Bill Windows, Mark Facebook, and Richard the Virgin over there. That's fantastic. Yeah. I'd love to see that.
Tesla.
And it sort of reminded me, and I kept thinking about it over and over again. I kept laughing at Tim Apple, Gary Google, and all that.
He's saying thanks, Don President.
And it reminded me a little bit. In fact, this morning I was thinking about. Do you remember the Pink Panther where Inspector Clouseau was in a house, and he was in it's like a manor house. Yeah, exactly. He walked in this room. He couldn't find this light switch in this room, and he walked in this room and he lit a match. He kept walking in this room. He was investigating a murder, but he's in this room. He kept walking for ages. Then someone came in and flipped the light switch on. He's on a treadmill. He's walking, and he said, "Oh, how did you do that?" And then he burnt his fingers in the match. But he saw some parallel bars, and he got on there. He went, "Oh, it's all coming back now." And he was going up and down the travel. He went to dismount. He dismounted down the staircase and landed in the living room below where all the suspects were. And he sort of got up and brushed himself down. And he said, "You, what is your name?" And he said, "I'm Jones, the gardener, sir." "And what do you do?" "I do the garden." And I thought that thing with Trump, it's very familiar to what we do in Wales. Do you remember Ivor the Engine? They used to call people by what they do, didn't they?
Yes.
Ivor the Engine. And look at Stevie here, little Stevie Jingles.
It
makes sense, doesn't it, everyone having that name? I think, you know, he wouldn't have to ask what they do. I think he's a bit of a genius, Tim Apple. He probably didn't know who he was. He probably didn't know. But someone said, he's, you know, Tim, he's Apple. He's a guy, Apple guy. So he said, oh, Tim Apple. Okay, that's fine.
Funny enough, I was working in Capital yesterday, went into, because it's like they're on a different floor, so you've got to buzz in on the door. So I was like, buzzing down. I was like, hello? And like, who's it? It's Steve. Steve who? Steve Martin. And then they were like, who? Oh, Jingles. Yeah, in you come.
Stevie Jingles, I know. Because that's when we start. Didn't we start saying that when you're on the XFM breakfast show? Is it Stevie Jingles?
Yeah, you came up with it.
All right. Anyway, let's listen to the little stocks. You know, We should give ourselves nicknames like that. It's a lot easier to remember. It makes sense. In a radio environment especially, when it's just voices and you say, you know, Stevie Jingles, people know what you do, don't they, straight away? Yeah. Anyway.
Steve Stocks.
Yeah, Steve Stocks. Steve Knott's Stocks.
Yours is probably the most simplest one on Capital. Welshie, just because
you're Welsh. Perfect. Because I worked with Johnny Vaughan and he couldn't remember my name. And he said, first day, someone said to me, listen, let's hit the news, because I was doing the desk for Johnny, I was next to him. He said, listen, when, get the news, the PC, the boss said, you know, get Johnny can talk forever. Just get the news on time. So if he's talking, don't care, cut him off, bring his mic down, hit the jingle, right? And I went to do it first, you know, the first, basically, 8 o'clock, it was, no, 7 o'clock, we started at six. And I went to just get talking, so I just fade him down, and he grabbed my hand, he said, no, Welshie, you fool! We were fighting on the fader, the first thing. And he said, everyone call me Welshie then, it was really odd. Anyway, Stocks, so did you see, by the way, at the moment, I'm now 55% in cash.
Right.
You know, I've got the heart of a bull, the head of a bear. I'm just feeling very bearish. I just think
what was the outcome of your Twitter survey? I saw you were doing both.
Oh yeah, I've done a few of those, and I've screenshot them all, and I'm going to put them up there. But I've screenshot them over the last few months, and the thing is, I think it's a contrarian index, right? And I said, are you feeling bullish or bearish? And I think it is a contrarian index because it does work like that. That kind of bull bear ratio does work like that. Because the more people that are bullish, right? And I talked about this with on the podcast this week, Dr. Daniel Crasby. He's written what's it called, The Behavioral Investor. It's about the psychology. And he said that there's more risk, of course, when everyone's bullish. There's more risk because everyone's in stocks and everyone thinks the rally will continue. That's the problem. He said, when everyone's bearish, that's the time to start investing because everyone's out and then there's no more people selling, you know. But
so what are you doing?
Well, at the moment, I think people are a bit worried at the moment, but I'm a bit bearish. I'm certain, you know. I'm not certain of what's going on, and so that's why I'm out. The thing is, I'm looking at stocks now, right, that don't need cash, that, you know, are self-funding, will not need cash, are going to become cash generative. And I did that video on the weekend, actually, about Phalanx, Audioboom, Metro is a mistake, and I'll tell you why. Because a Phalanx Audioboom thing, I don't think they need any cash, and that's because, and that's an avoidable risk. You know, I was thinking today, avoidable risks. Stocks, right, are all about risk versus reward, aren't they, right? Now, if you can cut down on the avoidable risks, the known risks, basically, the reward is more attainable, you know? So you can do this. There's lots of things you can cut down on, the risks, that you know about that you don't have to get it into. And first of all, number one, pre-guessing results. Whether they be drill results or, you know, financial results, don't try and pre-guess them. There's no point. It's a gamble. It's a risk you can avoid. And we see this with Coulter, for example, United Oil and Gas and Rebel Resources and all that. Trying to guess that, I mean, there was a 58% chance of success there. It didn't play out as people thought. It can still be commercial because they've done two sort of discoveries. People don't know about this, United Oil and Gas, but essentially they drilled in, you know, in Bournemouth area, and they went to an area that they didn't suspect, the drill bit, where I don't know how it worked. They found another formation, and they call that then Coulter South, which has around about 3 metres of net pay of gas. They don't know yet, but about 15 million barrels of oil, which is can be commercial, but they haven't done that much work on that formation, so they don't know much about it, apart from that. And then they went to the primary target, they re-drilled, sidetracked out of that one, into the primary target, the one where they thought was going to be commercial, and it wasn't. It looks like it's not. So it hasn't gone to plan, but they've got to do some more work now, you know, from a geological point of view, on the southern prospect, which still can be commercial. But, like I said, you know, that drilling there is a risk you know about. You can avoid it. Yeah, okay, wait until, if they have success, the share price would have jumped. Oh, fair enough. So the reward had gone down, but the risk had gone down as well. Because the equation of risk-reward, if you can remove as much of the risk as possible, you know, there's more reward on offer. And that's the thing, is that don't lose. If you don't lose money, you know, even if you break even, if it's, you know, you can either break even, lose money, or make money. If you get rid of losing money, then you're fine, you know?
I don't see that, well, for me anyway, it's not about guessing the result. It is essentially a gamble that you are taking. Yeah. But there's certain factors that you try and mitigate the risk by, except, right, there's a good board of directors, et cetera, et cetera. You know,
but when it comes to oil, or drilling and for oil, it's got nothing to do with it, really.
Hold on. There's some good aspects to that. So they're not a bunch of Muppets. There's a chance they know what they're doing, hopefully, etc. But ultimately, it is just a gamble for me. It's just like, yeah, So it'd be pretty rich of me to think, oh, it didn't come off. Because it's a gamble at the end of the day, and we're all in it. Like, well, you're not. Some people are in it to just see if it pays off. And so I fully accept that it might be, as they say, a duster, and you know, it goes. The share price will reflect that. But it's not. I don't see myself as trying to guess the result. I'm not guessing the results. I'm just kind of going, well, I'm hedging my bet to go, well, it's a good company. There's a chance, isn't there? So let's put some money in. And it is a bit of a gamble.
Yeah, it is. But that's what I've always said, haven't I?
That's what it is. But I'm going in fully eyes wide open.
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. But my take on things is the difference between gambling and investing is that you can sway the odds in your favour. And if you can do that, you can raise the probability of earning money, because that's what we're in it for, is to make money, and reduce the probability or the chance of losing money. That's what you should do, because you can't do that with horse racing. But, the odds are there, they're fixed, and you're racing.
That ultimately is basically a bit boring, isn't it?
No, it's not, because you know why? Because
it's less exciting than them hitting a great oil discovery.
Making little tumps of money is boring? It's not, is it really? Because, do you know what, you're always going to fight with your emotional self, and that's the problem. If we put systems down, I have a system, I've done, videos, and I have rules. I always break the rules. Do you know why? Because I'm a human. I'm an emotional character, and I can't, and that's the thing.
You're quite an extreme human.
Yeah. Let me just tell you about another thing, right? So, Red Emperor Resources, right? I don't know if you saw that. It was the multi-bagger of the day. Well, it bagged anyway. So, last, not Friday, just gone, obviously, the Friday before, they're drilling in the Winx well with 88 Energy. And with Pantheon Resources in Alaska, right? This is high impact, odds against, this is like a tenth, a one in ten chance of success, something ridiculous. So they're shallow target. They're obviously, when they're drilling, you have a total depth. You've got a certain depth, and you have all these horizons you want to, get oil from, several sort of targets. Now, the first one they came across, or one of the shallow regions, it looked bad. And then on a Friday, they were at 4 pence, they went down to 1.5 pence, right? So you can think, it lost like 60, 70, 80% of its value. And then on the Monday, they announced, they announced some good results from the lower down regions. And it went from then 1.5 pence up to 7.5 pence. That is crazy, isn't it? I mean,
but that's what I'm saying. That's exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. But you know what?
It's crazy, ridiculous, scary. But exciting!
You imagine all the people sold out on the 1st of March, on the 1st of March, and then on the 6th of March, we're nuts. But what I'm saying is, you can play those things, right? But if you look at the odds, then the chances are you're going to lose net lose over time if you keep playing that kind of game. Because if you got, like I said, 1 in 10 chance or 1 in 5 chance of success, you will not win. Unless you happen to put 5 times the money on that one winner that comes in, that's not the case. It won't happen. So what I'm saying is, it's nice to have a bit of that in your portfolio. Yes, a bit of fun.
I've been thinking about this, and I've actually recently, because of our conversations are probably on the podcast, but I think what I'm going to try and aim to get to is a position where a third of my portfolio is cash, a third is in good, solid, safe FTSE 100 and funds and things like that that are interesting and can make you money over the long term. That's great. And then a third, perhaps, in this kind of exciting, crazy, up, down, silliness. I've got into kind of like more like 80% of my portfolio in craziness.
Yes.
Where I need to get down to more like a third of them.
That's it. Steve, we need to do this with you as well, Steve. And I wouldn't say a third in cash. I mean, I'm extreme at the moment because I'm not sure. I think we're end of cycle. It's like, if you look at a chart, I just talking about probability again. If you look at a chart, so especially funds, not so much as stocks because they're
just a third is £1 million.
but listen, right? So you look at the chart, right? And when the price is down low and the fundamentals are the same, you should be buying, right? When the chart is up high and the fundamentals are the same, you should be selling because it's overpriced, right? In the middle, you don't know where it's going. At the moment, it's rolling over a bit. We're at the top, at the end of the cycle, 10 years of a rally we've had, pretty much, of a bull market. Okay, there's been volatility along the way. But we're 10 years in, and I've looked at the S&P, which is the broadest index in America, and there's a massive, what's called a topping pattern there, called a head and shoulders, and it's rolling over. And I do not like it, and I'm thinking, right, I don't know, if I'm not sure, get out. And I'm just saying, I've got 5 things here I've written down, actually, that are avoiding known risks. And at the moment, if you're not quite sure about something, get out, and that's where I am. I do have stocks, but I have small amounts now in stocks. And like I say, if I buy a stock, like I talk about, Phalanx and Boom, I'm literally going one 2% of my portfolio, the initial stake, and that's it, because I want to see it play out, and I want to see it. But so anyway, number one was pre-guessing results. It happened with Sabian Technology. I messed up there. It was a punt. I pre-guessed the results. I could have just waited, you know. Okay, it rallied strongly on the day. It'll always come back a little bit, you know. You have less reward, but less risk. I've done it the same with Metro. Metro Bank, I do believe it'll be okay in 2 or 3 years' time. It'll be a multi-billion pound bank. But at the moment, I should just wait for them to raise the money and wait for the pan out, wait for the share price to calm down. Wait. So never pre-guess stuff. There's always plenty more time, right? Number two, avoid companies operating in questionable jurisdictions. There's a cracking website called the Corruption Index. I'll put this on, in fact, an audio boomer. I'll put on the link below, you can see it. And literally, they've got a map of the world and the different colours. It goes to dark red, you know, the place where lots of corruption going on. A lot of those in Africa. You can avoid that. It's a known risk. You know, it's a good chance. Yeah. I mean, it's happened to Kibo Mining recently. The government they've been tendering on this coal to power project for ages, and all of a sudden the government said, no, it's not valid anymore, this tender. What? Are you kidding us? In Tanzania and Mozambique, those areas. Another one. Avoid companies that need cash. You know they need cash. Read their balance sheet. Have a look. Do they need cash? If it's a pre-revenue company or anything like that, avoid them. You don't need to do it. Wait until they raise cash if they're pre-revenue, you know? Avoid companies who have high levels of debt if they're earning money. Normally, companies that have debt have revenue and sort of profits, or they make money, because you can't raise bank debt unless you've got revenue, basically. But if a company's got a high level of debt, it's an avoidable risk. You don't need it. There's other companies out there without that debt, you know? So just don't bother with it. Debt can sink a company, and it has. It's sunk utility-wise, you know? As the share price went down, the market cap got smaller, the valuation got smaller. They've come to a stage where debt was as big as them, and all of a sudden debt was bigger than the company, and that's not sustainable anymore if you're making a loss. And then fifth, avoid companies whose share price has risen quickly or spiked. That's another thing. You can avoid that. You know, the fear of missing out is a killer to most investors. If you jump on the bandwagon because everyone on Twitter's ramping it, most people ramping on Twitter are traders. Traders don't make money. It's like they may make 1 in 5 and they'll shout loudly about that, but they'd be very quiet on the money they're losing, you know? I used to work in bookies, right? I was manager of bookies, and I used to find the guys always talk about the winners. Always. I used to talk to the same boasting to other people about the winners. And I'm like, mate, I'm here behind the desk taking your money. I know you're losing lots of money. You never talk about your losers. It's always the same. You know, people never talk about their losers, only about their winners. So I just think those are avoidable. There's probably a lot more avoidable risks. You know, you can avoid them. You know about them. Because you know what? There's plenty of unknown risks that can happen in investing that you won't see coming along, and macro events, or, you know, it's company events, or, like, who thought, you know, Petite Valerie, that guy that was going along nicely, and all of a sudden the CFO is tucking cash into his trouser pockets or whatever. You know, there's fraud and all that kind of stuff that you don't know about. That can happen. So why not avoid the known risk, and then, you know, the unknown risk as well, but then there's more chance, more probability. It's just about probability and odds, isn't it? And trying to play that game, you know? Did you see my video on Phalanx? I quite like them. They've been out of favour for a long time. Cybersecurity. Do you like that? Do you see them? Do you see it, Steve?
Do they need cash?
They've got 4 million in cash. They raised in 3 pence. What are they at the moment? They're at 2.5 pence. What are they at the moment? Yeah, 2.5 pence. There is 3 pence they raised in... Let's have a look here. I don't look at my watch list here. 2.45 pence. So below that, so obviously at the moment, again, I'm going very small because I'm not trusting the market at the moment. But yes, so their net assets on the 30th of September at 3.9 million. That's without that cash. So they are, add that cash to that, the balance sheet they got there, and that's close to 8 million. They're only valued at 9 million. So all those cyber contracts they've got and all that stuff is not valued at more than a million. They're listing and all that, you know? The guy, Mike Reed, and CEO and chairman, came on the podcast and said they were EBITDA profitable in July, and they are going forward on a monthly basis. That was July 2018. So they're breaking even. He also said it's worth looking at Progress's research note, which I did. I brought it up. Progress is covering the company as a broker or a writer, and they've got them be profitable for this year on a yearly basis, just marginally, just £100,000 in profit this year, hopefully, and then in 2020 making £1 million in profit. So I quite like that. And they did a massive contract, which is very significant, with a company called SolarWinds. I didn't realise who they were. I looked them up. They're a $5 billion company. Their revenues are $800 million. And SolarWinds is basically managed service providers. But The deal is with this, right? They get paid up front for some of this, but the deal is, apparently UK Solar Winds, they're also a cyber company in some way, have 2,000 managed service providers in the country, about 50 customers each. I didn't understand this, but basically John Blamey came on the podcast and said, if we going to convert 2% of those that we have contact with now, it would be around 5 million worth of revenue, or 4.8 million worth of revenue this year. And that doubles their current revenue. So I'm just thinking, okay, I like this. So the current revenue was 2.2 for 6 months. So I like that. You know, that deal there is a big deal coming along. They're already EBITDA profitable. They have cash. They're not valued above net assets that much. And so I quite like that. And they've been out of favour for a long time. You know, people said, oh, and so apparently they've been trying to sort of become profitable for a long time. But I think they will do it now. I don't think they have to go back to the market for cash anymore. And I think their, you know, revenue's going up and contracts are looking healthy. So I quite like, you know what I'm saying? And I've got nothing in that area, the cybersecurity area, you know? And I think they've got government contracts. I think it's an area that, especially if you're a listed company, you can take out, you can acquire lots of other companies. I know even though it's a hot space, it's very competitive, you know? But as a listed company, you can take out other companies, you know, and create a bigger market share. I mean, what do you think, Gare? What do you think? Cybersecurity.
Steve.
Cyber Cafe.
Well, you just get AVG installed, can't you?
That's it, right? I'm selling my shares. Cheers. Steve is in one sentence. What is AVG?
That's it.
Oh, Macavie or any of those.
Okay.
Do you use anything on your Macs?
No.
Not me. Nothing at all.
No. I think Macs are fairly secure, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Based on Linux, isn't it? Linux. I don't know. I've always been told that it's okay, but yeah, I've not really ever looked into it.
Yeah.
Depends what websites you visit, really, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. Well, I only visit business sites. You know what I'm saying?
It was a fairly muted response, wasn't it, to your rant there, all about the company we've just gone, yeah, it's all right.
Business such. Yeah, no, I just think on a valuation basis and going forward, the fundamentals are good, they've got cash, they don't need... Do you know what? I'm really, at the moment, I don't like companies having to go back to the market. I just think as the global economy slows down, that'll be harder. Yes. Banks will not want to lend more. Companies with debt will have problems, I think. Companies that need to raise money will have issues. And I think it's an avoidable risk. You don't need to invest in companies that have to keep going back to the market with a begging bowl saying, please, Hank, we need more cash for operationals. You know, we don't need that. Can I have some more cash, please, sir? I don't want to avoid that.
What Steve was saying is a valid point. What is their kind of point of difference, really?
It's more
You talk about people at home. They don't want, this is business.
I know he was, but I'm talking about in the corporate world. What's their point of difference against against their competitors in that
field?
Well,
I don't know, but when it comes down to it, right? When it comes down to it, I may have pre-guessed a little bit here, expecting them to be profitable this year, but their broker note says so, and their revenues increases and then their costs coming down. So I may be assuming a little bit there. But listen, when it comes down to it, right? And I'm looking at cash flow in cash generative businesses now. When it comes down to it, it doesn't matter what a company does. Doesn't matter what it does at all. You can just look at the cash flow statement and that's it. Are they generating cash? Yes, they are. Look at their valuation. Are they undervalued? Yes, they are. Buy it. Doesn't matter.
I know what you mean.
Warren Buffett, he doesn't care. He doesn't care what the company does. He does look for companies with a moat. In fact, you're right there. He looks for companies with a moat. That means a point of difference, barriers to entry. But if a company is generating cash and making profit, doesn't matter what they do, really. You don't have to know anything about it. All you have to look at is the figures.
But for the share price to show significant growth, you've got to have a load of
are they growing?
Private investors. No, you've got to have a lot
No, you don't.
What was my point going to be?
You say you have a load of private investors who are investing and buying it because they like it and tucking the shares in their pan pockets and they like it a lot. But no, listen, a company, if you look at the value investor, I mean, I'm not saying this is the same kind of thing, it's a bit of growth, but go back to Warren Buffett and his mentor as well, which is, I can't think of his name now, but before that, they say in the short term, the stock market is a voting machine. You know, popularity. In the long term, it's a weighing machine. That means, after a while, the assets and the cash generated will re-rate the company. What you're looking for, the companies that are undervalued compared to what they're generating. So, you can hold this business as long as it's growing and the cash is generating, it's getting bigger and bigger, it's creating value. That value, sooner or later, will be reflected in the company's value. I mean, and that's where you make money, or they made money by looking at companies that were valued below their book value, and yet they're generating strong. You know, so
My question to you, and unlike resource companies where they've got certain dates in the future, be it a drill or whatever that's going, phalanx. Absolutely. Well done to them. Very good, solid business by the sounds. Good growth potential.
Well, not yet. It's been losing money, but yet, hopefully now it's going to go
potential,
from...
Sorry. Yeah, yes, yeah. Potential. I can see that. Okay, so that's good. But then over what? The next 5 years, sure. And then what are you seeing the share price? Because you've got to look at the share price. What are you hoping the share price does from here?
I'm hoping...
2.5p now.
Yeah, I'm hoping we go from a model where they've been losing money, so... When a company's are losing money, right, they're degrading value pretty much, okay?
Yeah.
At the moment, the value of the company is that you value a company and its value is going down because they're losing money. Now, they've been EBITDA, they're positive since July. They're hoping to be yearly profitable before tax. So generating value. And then, so I'm looking at their figures. The next milestone now, when you've got companies that are in resource companies that are pre-revenue, have no money, interims and the final results are pointless pretty much, because they haven't got any revenue. Yeah. Now, with companies that are generating revenue and profits, you're looking at the interims and you're looking at the finals. That's all you need to really look at. I mean, the trading updates that can affect the share price, like it did with Brave Bison, they said we're going to be profitable this year. So that went a bit mad there. So I'm looking at the next set of results to be an improvement, almost down to the point where they'll be, say, not making any loss. And you can then value the company on, a multiple of what they've generated in profits, So that I expect that to go up. So like I said, by £1 million. So what I'm saying is, if they generate £1 million in 2020, like the broker says, you can put that on 10, 15, 20 times earnings, depending how fast they grow. Strip out the cash at the moment. They had £4 million of cash. And they're already valued at £6 million. So you could say, you could value that minimum, £10 million plus cash, and so even £20 million. So, and also, just the significance of going from a loss-making company into a revenue-generating, a profit-generating company, or money-generating company, will re-rate the stock price. Because they're creating value now, it's like a company going from just an exploring company, a mineral resource company going from an explorer to doing a scoping study. They're creating value, and so it's that re-rate that you'll get.
Absolutely. But is it really going to go gangbusters, or is it going to be?
That depends on the growth.
I know, but
if there's no growth there, I'll get out. If there's growth there, I'll get out. But I think the fact that they say, listen, we are now profitable, going to be profitable for this year, will have a major re-rating on the share price.
Yeah. I think it's easy to lose sight of the fact that, a 20%, 50%, 60% growth is in a share price is fantastic, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
What you could do in the bank or, in a longer term sort of fund, that's incredible to that sort of level. But that's just the change of mindset where some of these resource companies, Predator Oil and Gas, going from 2.5p to 8p, that kind of growth. That's the fun stuff. That's the interesting.
I'll have some of those. All I think at the moment is that their revenues for the interims are 51%. That's good growth, Their gross market has increased to 36% from 26%. So they've got a good margin and they're growing. So that's where you can look at the growth and the margin.
What I'm interested from you is, when are you going to, have you got a set of goals to get out? Are you thinking,
at the moment,
then I'll get out?
Yeah, well, no, because I'm looking for companies now, I want to be a business owner, and I'm looking for companies I can hold, tuck away and hold on and it go for the next 5 years, I'm looking 5-10 years, hopefully.
I bet you £100 you don't hold Phalanx for 10 years.
If they don't keep growing.
You will sell it.
Listen. If the share price goes up, the value goes up, the risk goes up.
Right.
Doesn't the reward doesn't go up? The reward gets less as you have more reward. The risk grows, not the other way around. Of course, if it becomes overvalued, you have to keep evaluating it. Yes, I think it's overvalued. If they get to the stage where they are earning £1 million profit, and they're valued at £50 million. Then hang on, that's overvalued in my mind. Of course, I'll take some off. I've done that with all. I've done that with all companies. Vesarion, for example, weren't creating a profit, and they were valued at £200 million. And people said no, they're worth that. In my mind, I understand it's a hot space in a graphene, but even so, I don't think it justified that valuation.
So, on that basis, what I'm trying to get at is, where you're saying you'll hold for 5 years or whatever.
No, that was the wrong thing for you to say. Sorry. I mean yeah, right. What I'm saying is you always have to reevaluate all the time stock and shares. Yeah. And do you know what? The only time you have to do that is with funds, essentially.
Yeah.
And are that's why, Steve.
This conversation.
So no. That's what. No. You always have to reevaluate. Listen, I've reevaluated so many stocks, right? And I've got out of and avoided massive fall-offs. Yeah, I mean, I'm talking from Asia Met, for all my favourite stocks I had, from Horizonte to Predator Oil and Gas, to United Oil and Gas. I've reevaluated and got out before massive drops, and that served me well. You know,
I've had two things there. Predator Oil and Gas hasn't had a massive drop.
Hold on. I see the risk is going up.
Recovering.
What?
Asia Met is recovering. Don't be harsh on the arse.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying at the time, I still like Asia Met. I genuinely, like Tony Meany. I love the guy. I think he's fantastic.
He's still in Asia Met.
Yes.
And I think it will probably do well because he's got a good management there with skin in the game. I think it will do well. I'm generally bearish, and I am a person of extremes, so I'm generally bearish on resource stocks. So I've gone out. I'm looking for tech stocks now, which I've done well in terms of, but now I'm looking for tech stocks or new media stocks or something like that. That will generate cash and won't need to go back to the market. And they are businesses already, pretty much formed businesses or becoming profitable businesses.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go that. So I've gone from the extreme. Yes. No, Asia Met's done really well on the bounce. But I mean, I didn't even have the fall because I got out.
Yeah. No. Well done.
I know. I just looked at the value.
Mr. Justin Wade.
No. What I'm saying. No. Listen, that's the equivalent back. The answer you gave. I looked at the valuation of it over 100 million, and there was still some pretty much exploring. And I thought, in Indonesia, I've got one. And I thought, okay, at the moment, I'm going to get out. Yeah. And I also read about macro issues. I also read about macro issues. And I was also a bit spooked on the macro side of it, China slowing down, all that. Now,
so here's the thing, and this is purely just a personal opinion, but so I'm looking at Phalanx, and I don't get a massive fear of missing out. Like, I hope it gets...
Hang on. You only have fear of missing out when the share price rises. That's where people go wrong.
You should have fear
of missing out when it's not rising. People buy high, sell low. That's the problem.
What I'm saying is that, that share price could well double in value in the next, 12 months or something, whatever. Yeah. And well done if it does. That's cool. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with missing out on that.
That's good, though. That's good you like that. Because you know what? You should be okay with it. There's so many opportunities I had. I could have jumped into Red Emperor Resources. And on the day they announced that good result, right, it opened up about 20% up. I could have bought into that. It ended up about 105% up. So I could have had a nice chunk. I didn't because I decided not to go with resource stocks. Yeah. And so I missed out there, but I didn't. Do you know what? I said to other people, well done for staying in there. If you stayed in on that Friday when it dipped and you held your nerve and you said, hang on, the results isn't through yet. Let's wait till the final result. I said, well done to those people. And we need liquidity in the junior markets to keep it going. People who get jealous about other people making money doesn't work for you either. If people are losing money, it's worse for you. You want people to make money. The general investors, it's a small community on AIM, pretty much. These people who make money buy the stocks. It helps the entire community. So it's called shares. We share. You share in the company. You share.
How big is the community? I often wonder this. I don't know if there's any way of finding out, but how many?
No, I mean, if you look at the volumes going through, but what I'm saying is you've got to get rid of that fear of missing out. That's good. That's very good. And when you come down to cold, hard light of day and just evaluate the company and not have fear of missing out. But like I said, you don't have fear of missing out when a share price is going down. It's only when it starts to rise. And that's the problem. Now, people... buy low, sell high. It's the oldest cliche in the stock market history, but people can't do it. Do you know why? Because emotions get the... You don't want to buy a falling stock price. You don't want to sell a rising stock price, but you should, or that's where you should be looking, So you suss that, and you sussed. Did you listen to that guy who I had on the podcast? I got another one on coming on, another trader.
No, what name was that?
His name is Dr. Daniel. Dr. Daniel Crosby, And he said research across 19 different countries showed the more you trade, the worse you do, right? So the more often you trade, the worse you do. And invariably, traders don't know they're even losing money. It's like 80-90% of traders lose money. This was day traders, people in and out. You see it on Twitter a lot doing this. And then this study done, And this is a self-select group of people who believed they were making money as traders, right? And they found 25% of the group had underperformed the market by 5% or more. So a quarter of those people who thought they were making money trading, right, had underperformed the actual market. So they just put the money in a fund. They'd done better, you know?
Yep.
Another 30-plus percent had underperformed the market by 15% or more. That's nuts, isn't it? So, and do you know what? This is why, Steve, I was going to say with you, 30% in cash is a lot. I mean, like I said, I'm at 55 because I'm unsure at the moment. I wouldn't have that much. You look at any sort of investing companies, they won't have, I mean, even big houses, they won't have more than 10, 20% in cash, you know? So, but at the moment, I'm feeling bearish. But funds, do you know what? I'm really getting into my, I own six funds now. I like them. I own two dividend-paying funds. They pay out quarterly, which is quite nice. It's a UK dividend and an American dividend. And they pay quarterly. I've just gone through an ex-dividend date. I'll be paid in 2 weeks' time. I like the income coming from that. And I'm happy to buy on dips. If I get 10% in that, I'll top up. Because the difference with funds and individual companies is if an individual company, you know, has a massive dip, there may be a fundamental problem with that company's revenue, profit, balance sheet. Could be corruption. Yeah. Could be anything happening there. You don't know. So just randomly buying on massive dips on a single company is quite risky, you know? With a fund, and I'm going to do this video on this weekend, and it's basically, it is a guaranteed way to make money over the long term. Guaranteed, pretty much. And it's quite safe. Like I say, it's a NASDAQ 100. Because what I've done is filtered the best performing funds, and it's a NASDAQ 100, pretty much. So, and then it's not only what you buy, of course, it's when you buy. Because if you buy that at the top, then it'll take you years to make money on that. So it's when to buy it. And so this is the way forward. And if it's the kind of thing, it's a pension, it's a retirement fund, isn't it? So you keep topping up every time. And the technical way I've done this is looking at the relative strength index. But you can also do it on 10% dips. If you're down 10%, buy more. Because you are betting on the biggest economy, the best stocks in the biggest economy in the world. Now, if that goes through, the entire world will collapse. Because if the dollar will crash, everything will crash. It'd be worse than the Great Recession of 1930. So it's as, you know, it's as risk-free as you can get when you're investing in equities. And why funds? Because instantly, they're pushing one button, you're instantly diversified across about 100 stocks. Now, if you try to do that individually and buy all the stocks individually, it costs you loads of money in fees. So it's, and you know, I've read an article recently about how big companies, big investors are getting into funds. Because of that, it's a lot easier and things. So, Steve, I highly suggest you get into funds, and I'd start dipping in now. And what I quite like as well, I bought the silver, so ETFs, exchange traded funds, right? Steve, do you understand funds, Steve? What how they work?
Not really.
Okay, well, basically, it's someone invests a pot of money, and basically they invest across, you know, a load of different assets for you. You know, rather than you do it individually, which costs you lots of money.
Well, I get that side of it.
Okay,
but
exchange traded means it's floated, so they're listed, and so it's quite liquid. You know, so you can buy in like a share. You buy it like a share. So, I've recently bought a gold and silver ETF, right? And basically, what this company does is it's BlackRock iShares, but they invest in a load of silver producers, silver companies, you know, that produce silver and all that stuff. So the share price of this is linked to the silver share price. Silver's been down historical lows, right? Now, there's something called the gold-silver ratio. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but gold, of course, rallied yesterday because the government, the US jobs figure came in way below expectations. So they only took on 20,000 jobs in last month. Now, the estimate was for 180,000. So they missed it massively. And they say, oh, okay, the government shutdown is probably something to do that or something. So the dollar weakened because people thought, okay, the Fed are not going to raise rates now because the economy looks like it's slowing down. They don't need to do that. So the price of gold went up because gold is obviously a safe haven. So gold rallied. But gold and silver always sort of work together. They correlate. You know, I mean, if gold rises, so does silver because it's used in industrial use as well, unlike gold. But it is seen as a precious metal as well. But of late, it's been lagging. Silver's been lagging. And whenever this happens, and there's a ratio of this, normally an index from 0 to 100. Normally, the average over long term, the mean, is about 15. So that's, I mean, you know, it moves it. So, but at the moment, it's at 85. That means it's way off. And it hasn't been, I mean, the closest it's been to is 100. And I just think, so I bought a silver ETF because I think gold rallies, silver will too. And gold has rallied, is a bit higher than silver at the moment. So I've done that. And it's always good to have a bit of gold, but a silver in your portfolio. And it's the easy way of doing it. Rather than trying to research individual gold producers or silver producers. It's like that with any index. You know, any index, rather than trying to research individual companies, why not just buy the best companies in America or the best dividend payers in the UK? That's what I've got. It's like 50 companies that pay the best dividends, and they're screened. So they're not only good dividend payers, they've got dividend cover. This means they can afford to pay the dividend. They've been consistent in increasing their dividends. So that's all done for you, all that research, just by buying a dividend-paying fund. It's simple, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. What's the name of that one, sorry?
That is, I'll put it up, but I'll send you a link to all of them.
But didn't you not say a few weeks ago, though, that kind of sit on the cash until that RSI kind of drops?
Yes. Well, do you know what? At the moment, I'm just, literally, I've put in...
He's impatient.
I'm impatient. But I want to see how they perform my portfolio. So
I'm not going to invest at the moment. Hang on.
There's one, though, you should have a look at, and that's dividend paying funds. Because, Stevie, as we know with dividends, as the share price goes down, the yield goes up. And I'll give you an example of what that means. So let's say a company has a share price of £1 per share, right? And they say this year we're paying out 5p for every share you own in dividends. That's effectively 5%, right? Now, if the share price goes down to, say, 50p, so it halves, they're still going to pay that dividend because they've mentioned it. That becomes 10% of the share price. That's a good yield, you know? So that's what happens with dividend-paying shares. So I'm happy to top up massively in these on falls in these dividend-paying funds because you'll always be going to be paid a quarterly dividend anyway, and you'll be getting income all the time. That's reinvested. Reinvest that, buy more shares, and so you're getting compound growth, you know? So I generally, Steve, I would go for these. I'd start slowly, edging into these dividend-paying funds, you know?
When it comes to actually choosing a fund, though, that's, in a way, it's even harder than choosing.
It is, and do you know what? I've you're right. There's so many funds available out there. Yeah. Basically, what you're going to look for is low costs. So below half of 1% total costs. TER is called total. I can't think what it's called, but cost. But I've stuck to basically Vanguard and BlackRock. They're biggest in the world. BlackRock and Vanguard are like low cost.
And the whole past performance is no indication of future. How do you assess it really?
But do you know what? With those that past performance, they always got to say that, of course. And I'm not saying I'm not this back testing I did of the Nasdaq 100 fund. Like I said, if you put £18,000 in, this is every time it dipped since 1988, it's gone to 23 on the RSI. You've got 200 grand back. You know, over the, I'm not saying if it'll rise. That we had a big rise in the last 10 years. Yeah. You know, so. But you're buying at low levels. But I'm not saying you get the exact same return, but you will get a good return because you're investing in a stock market that is already, the Nasdaq has returns about 8, 9, 10% a year anyway, but you are buying at the best times, the optimum times to buy. So you'll do better than that anyway. So time immemorial, for the last 100 years since the Nasdaq's been going, it's been returning, on average, over 8% every year, but you are buying at the best times. So you can say you get more than 8%.
Here's another question then. So obviously, as most people do, put money into their pensions, but the advantage of putting money into your pension is you don't have to pay your 20% tax on it. Mm-hmm. So obviously, instantly, by putting any money I've made into my ISA, I've lost 20% there that I've got to pay on tax. So what's the advantage? And that's going into kind of a fund.
No, it's a tax relief. I know. I would say though, right?
Tax relief,
I would say genuinely, it depends on how much you're going to make over time, isn't it? If you're going to make like I said, that return on that fund was 1,000-odd percent. Don't worry about the 20%. You know, it's like you've knocked by that.
It's all good and well saying if you're going to make 20%, but I want to know whether that 20% is worth it. Am I going to lose that 20% in tax relief and then make 20%?
Do you know what? In funds, I think you will still easily make it if you buy in the right times. But on individual shares at a high risk, you are playing at the moment. Most of the shares you hold are super high risk. You shouldn't be owning them because for people.
I agree with that.
And these funds are as safe as you can get in the equity space and still get a decent return. And as
you can invest in funds in your SIP. You could use a SIP to do this, and then you'd get your tax relief. I'm not a very good pensions expert, but you'd still get tax relief from a SIP, don't you? I haven't got one. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think so. I did look at this.
Self-invested pension.
Yeah.
So it's basically like an ISA, but you're investing in a pension plan. But then you're having a bit more control over where you're investing.
Yeah, do you know what?
You'll get your relief. You will get your tax relief, I think. Yeah. We need to get a tax expert on.
Exactly. Do you know, I know very little, because I got money in the ISA and I think that's more efficient for me. I've not even looked into a self-invested pension plan.
The thing with an ISA is the money's going to be, it's readily available.
Yeah.
You know, when you need it in the coming years, whereas any pension thing, you're locking it away, aren't you? So,
yeah.
And but I fully intend to die before I'm 65, so, you know, I don't need it.
Yeah, hopefully.
There you go. Hopefully, thanks.
Yeah, so how does the SIP work? It's a DIY pension, you just self-invest in you. But do you know what, after I read about this, cause I know nothing about SIPs at all, low-cost SIPs, full SIPs, all that stuff. I'm looking at money saving expert, but But listen, so Steve, I would start, if you got, listen now, traditionally, seasonally, I mean, at the moment, if we have a good, decent Brexit outcome, a deal is done, Trump and Xi come across the trade tariff, I think we'll rally nicely into April and it'll work well, because April is generally a very good month. And then I'd start getting into cash. And honestly, I've looked at the S&P, I think we're turning over. And I think now is the time to start edging into dividend-paying funds, Steve. And then when we get to the low and start hitting the low, start getting into the NASDAQ fund, which is not dividend-paying.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think I want to gamble on Brexit going well, to be honest with you.
No, you're not gambling on that, though. You are, Steve, you are basically investing with this, like, for example, the dividend-paying companies. You are investing in some of the, you know, 50 strongest companies in the UK, and you are reinvesting dividends, and so that's not, you get income from that, you know. Look, the S&P, right, I looked at it this week, and went back on the charts, S&P 500, which is the biggest range of the American markets, it's only closed below the 200-day moving average, right, more than four times within a six-month period, right, in the last 10 years. Only that twice in the last 10 years. One was 2016, one was after the financial crash. It's just done that again. It's just closed below the 200-day moving average, which is the major trend line for bull bear, right? So it's done that, and it's done it in four times in the last 6 months. It's not done that, you know, ever. Well, it hardly ever does that. And it's done it twice in the last 10 years. 2016, we had a bit of a volatility, and then just after 2009. So I'm thinking at the moment, we are looking at a big wobble still. And even if we have Brexit go well, and this is, if the two of the big macro factors go well, I think we'll be okay for a while. If they don't, more of a wobble. So, me, there's more uncertainty. It's avoidable risk. That's why I'm out, you know. There's risks there. They're avoidable. I'm happy to get back in once, you know, these play out nicely. And even then, I'm worried about global growth. But, I mean, you know, so at the moment, yeah, I think we're in an area. But I think if one of these play out well, two play out well, April will be a nice month, and I think we should start getting into a bit of cash, maybe start going into funds then, you know, Steve, and really switching your portfolio out of risky stocks, getting into funds more. Because, Steve, you can sit there and do nothing with funds, just you can look at a fund, it's a decent fund, if it's 10% down, just buy some more. Simple as that. Because, you know, over the long term, you'll do well.
But passive trackers are
exactly,
also...
passive trackers, it's the same thing. Well, NASDAQ 100 is a passive tracker. That's a tracker.
Oh, that is impressive, sorry.
Yeah, so S&P, you can do S&P as well, 500. You can back all of America's market, bigger market.
Yeah.
And basically, if it's down 10%, buy.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get to cash at the moment. I think as Pete, as well, is, you know, some of the stocks are just quite down, just waiting for them to recover a little bit, just so you can kind of get them on a high day, really, just to get a bit of... Yeah. It'd be stupid to sell them now at the moment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's no rush. These things take ages. If you look at this chart, yeah. I mean, it takes like, you know, 6, 7, 8 months to start turning over, moving. It takes ages, you know, so there's always plenty of time. Like I said, do you know what? If you learn anything, there's always more time, you know?
So did you say you're going to do a video on these funds that you've identified?
On the funds I'm looking at, and I do the theory that I've kind of, the theory I've come up with, and then...
That will be an interesting one to watch, and I will take a note and then start looking, because it's hard, like I say, to have even a start point of looking at funds, isn't it? But I'm conscious, and I have been for a while, that I should be kind of putting some money into safer things.
Yes. In fact, do you know what? I just got a direct message from someone on Twitter, who just said to me, "Just, I'm really interested in looking at these bigger caps and funds you're looking at. I've got too much cash idle. I have a premium bond, and they give me 0.02% annual return, which is pointless, isn't it? You know, and like I said, you can get, you know, even if you get, if you, at the moment in this market, I think over the next year, if you're just making money, that's, if you're not losing money, it's a good thing, you know. And you're getting a return for your cash, because I've got cash in there and I'm away doing nothing. That's why I'm going into some of these funds trying to get some kind of return in it, because having no return is like I said, cash suffers with inflation. So the value of cash goes down. You have to keep earning money on your cash to make it worth anything long term. So, you know, you've got to earn some money on it. Anyway, I think that's long enough, isn't it, really?
Probably, isn't it? Yeah.
Good news on Brave Bison this week, by the way. Did you see that? Are you in Brave Bison?
No.
Bad
news on Metro Bank for you there.
Yeah, I was way out of that. Do you know, I should wait. Yeah. Wait. Wait until they raise the money. They haven't raised money yet. Are you in that? No?
No.
Steve?
No.
Good. Brave Bison's very good, though. It's a growth company.
I know, it balances, doesn't it?
Yeah. But this is it. No, I've got tiny amounts in there. No, but, you know, with my ARK filter, like I say, I've got more in Brave Bison than I have in Metro. I've got 1% in Metro. I've got about 10% in Brave Bison. So
there we are.
The leverage works out for me nicely.
Right way round, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, boys, have a nice weekend. Oh, is England playing this weekend, or are they giving up? The Six Nations, or are they still playing?
Okay, cool. Have a good weekend. Bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.